The following is a CA original.
Pouncer, the Palm Squad. Pre- and post-game parties on Beale Street. It's all part of the Memphis Tigers basketball game day experience. This is the Tiger Basketball Podcast.
What's happening, Tiger basketball fans? We are back for another edition of the Tiger Basketball Podcast. I'm Mark Giannato, Commercial Appeal Sports columnist. I'm joined, as usual, by Jason Munns, our Tiger basketball beat writer at the Commercial Appeal. We are coming to you the morning after Memphis gets an emphatic 90-74 win over St. Louis at FedEx Forum to improve to 3-0 on the season. Tigers get a game high or team high 18 points from, and I bet if you asked 2 weeks ago, you wouldn't have predicted this, Tyler Harris. The freshman trio of Amani Bates, Jalen Duren, and Josh Minot all again have strong games. The Tigers, you know, while showing some flaws, in their first real challenge of the year, against a team, I'm not going to say comparable talent because it wasn't, but a decent team, win going away. Win emphatically, despite its flaws. Jason, overall impressions from this 3-0 start, and I guess most importantly from last night's win over St. Louis, because I think we can both agree the wins over Tennessee Tech and North Carolina Central could only really tell you so much.
Yeah, so, you know, you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it how Penny Hardaway spun it last night in the post-game press conference. He called it, I believe his word was scary, given the fact that Memphis committed 24 turnovers, got out-rebounded on the offensive glass by 10, gave up 23 offensive rebounds total. And what was the other thing? St. Louis took 20 more shots, 20 more field goal attempts than Memphis did, and yet they still won by 16 points. And it wasn't even that close. St. Louis, got some garbage time in there in the last 49 seconds. They outscored Memphis 6-0. So really, it was, it wasn't even as close as it looked in the final score. So you can look at it that way. If Memphis is playing, reasonably not well, and yet they're still beating teams like that and scoring 90 points per game, that is scary. But then you can also look at it like, my God, 24 turnovers, a ton of foul trouble early. It didn't turn out to be a huge issue in the game. Only one player fouled out, but in toward the end of the first half, they had six guys with two fouls apiece. That's not great. The offensive rebounding stuff is problematic, but like Penny said, the shooting is what's keeping them in games. They finished 54% for the game last night, and that's even with starting 1-for-5 from the field and Landers not only going 2-for-8. So, it's kind of a mixed bag, but they are 3-0 and are outscoring these teams. They've been dominant despite not being, not firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of the different things that emerged from that here in a bit. The rotation, the point guard situation, and what it all means moving forward as Memphis takes on Western Kentucky Friday and then heads to Brooklyn next week for probably its toughest games that will be tougher than even last night, obviously, against Virginia Tech and then potentially Xavier or perhaps Iowa State. But the way I look at it, Jason, is sort of towards the form. Like, it feels like a lot of these problems, if they're still happening in March, like, yeah, they will be problems. They'll keep this team from reaching its ceiling. And that's why I think it's fair to point them out. At the same time, like, man, they're pretty darn good already. Like, even though they're making all of these mistakes, there's like, this team is different. Like, what's amazing is a lot of the things that are going wrong for this team are like the same things that have happened the past couple years under Penny Hardaway. They turn the ball over too much. This year, they're not rebounding the ball well offensively. They're not keeping teams off the glass well. Like, other teams are getting a lot of offensive rebounds against them, as you mentioned last night against St. Louis, the latest example, but it happened even against North Carolina Central and Tennessee Tech. They still are having trouble. They're still shaky at the free throw line. They still, you know, DeAndre Williams, most notably, still can't stay out of foul trouble. That was a problem last year, too, for him. Penny still plays too many guys, you know, like a lot of things that were wrong with the program the last couple years that kept them out of the, whether it was 2 years ago, kept them from being considered a tournament team before it was canceled, or last year when it kept them out of the NCAA tournament. Ultimately, a lot of those things are still happening, but they have so much more talent. And particularly, as you mentioned, guys who can score and shoot. Like, it's like Amani Bates is unlike any player Memphis has had in recent memory. Same with Jalen Duren. Josh Minot looks really good as a true freshman. And Landers Nolly looks like a better player, a more mature player out there than his first year. I mean, last night, Lester didn't play well. Earl Timberlake had another bad game. Malcolm Dandridge was pretty non-existent off the bench again.
Show me a game last season where Landers Nolly and Lester Quinones combined to go 3 for 11 and Memphis wins by double digits.
And DeAndre didn't play well either. DeAndre didn't play that well either. And they won going away. And I think that speaks to just how good this team already is, I think, and also what it could become. Like, I don't think they're a top five team yet, but they've got the potential to be if they clean some things up, if Penny shortens rotation. I think, you know, I wrote a column about this over at commercialappeal.com. I think Tyler Harris is almost emblematic of all of this. Like, here's a guy who would be on scholarship at a lot of places in the country. And I think we can all learn a lot from him. And I think this team can learn a lot from him because he came back home and walked on this team because, you know what? He went to Iowa State last year and, you know, it sucked being on a terrible team. You know, like, that's what he said last night. Like, yes, he wanted to come home. He never wanted to leave Memphis. He also just wanted to be on a winning team again. And that's what this team is already. And, you know, they're going to be tested more, whether it's Friday, whether it's next week in Brooklyn, whether it's once they start playing these SEC teams, and, you know, kind of ramping up to those that Tennessee and Alabama week, if you will, in December. But it is a good team, man. That's my impression from the first three games. It's a good team that feels like it's really just starting to scratch the surface of what it might be able to become. And so there are flaws, but I think they're flaws that are like March flaws, you know, like they're flaws that, yeah, if they turn the ball over 20 plus times, you know, it's going to be hard to win against Tennessee. It's going to be hard to win in March, you know, against Hugh, if you're giving up 20 some odd offensive rebounds against St. Louis, you know, how many are you going to give up against Houston? You know, it's November. It was November 16th when they played St. Louis. Like, it's early, and the baseline from where they're starting from feels so much higher than the past couple teams is how I guess I would phrase it. And it starts with Amani Bates, but it also goes even to like a guy like Tyler Harris, who showed last night an incredible story that kind of gets overshadowed because of the Amani and Jalen factor and all that. Like, we forgot that, like, he was coming back almost because he's a walk-on and whatever. But, like, it's an incredible story, one, that he came back to Memphis and decided to walk on. And two, like he showed last night, like he could be a valuable piece for this team as like a spark off the bench. Because when he's hitting shots, he's a great player. Like he had, again, much like this team, has his flaws. But man, like there are some parts of his game where you're just like, damn, this guy's good, you know? And so I thought that was a lot of fun last night. And who would have predicted that Tyler Harris would lead the team in scoring in the third game of the season? That's wild.
Yeah, not me. Certainly. I mean, I thought kind of all along, ever since he came back, that I mean, listen, he's we saw it at Pro Day and at the at like the open run for the Memphis Rebounders Club that they had. I mean, like, you know, he can still shoot. I mean, that is and there's always going to be a place for somebody who can do that. I mean, on any team. And I mean, look, Landers didn't have it last night. He was 0 for 3 from 3. Earl Timberlake and Alex Lomax were having their issues early in the game. So they needed something off the bench to come in and give them a lift to create some separation because they were having trouble getting, you know, getting a cushion against this pesky St. Louis team. And he did that. I mean, and I think you hit the nail right on the head that his, you know, a lot of people can learn a lot from what he has experienced and what he said, the perspective that he now has. I mean, bottom line, you boil it all down, and he is living proof that losing sucks way worse than not playing very often. Like he left because he thought his minutes were going to decrease. He could see that coming. He could see Landers Nolly was coming in, so on and so forth. He could see his minutes were decreasing. So he said, I'm going to go somewhere where I can play, you know, the minutes that I want to play. Well, he goes somewhere where they're terrible and decides that it's not worth it. It's not worth it to go somewhere else to get all these minutes if we're not going to win.
And I know for a fact he had options, maybe not Power 5 options, but he had options to go to like mid-majors around the country and be the best player on the damn team, you know, and be on scholarship. And he chose to walk on at Memphis. Like, that's what he wanted to do. Great story. Just a great story associated with this team. And it was just fun. It was fun watching him light it up like he did. It was just the highlight of the night, obviously, very much so. So as we go through now and we kind of take a step back from that St. Louis game, Jason, a couple things I want to go over. Let's start first with the point guard situation. You wrote about it over at commercialappeal.com. We saw last night Lomax started again. I thought after a shake, you know, kind of a wobbly start, just like the, you know, and the entire team got off to a wobbly start, he was fine. Like, it wasn't like a spectacular performance, but it wasn't a bad performance either. Earl Timberlake also played point guard. He had just a nightmarish stretch when he first came in the game. Like, just really was a walking turnover early on when he came in. Didn't think he ever really found it the whole game. It wasn't never was as bad as it was early. But just didn't have a great game. Didn't have another. Now it's now out of the five games this team has played, three in the regular season, two exhibition games, he's only played like well in one of them, you know. The other four had been whatever. And then, you know, at various times you had a lot other guys bringing the ball up the floor, but I think Penny made it clear post game that what he wants is for Alex Lomax and Earl Timberlake to be the point guards for this team. He also acknowledged, you know, it might not work out like I want it to. Right. Where would you assess the point guard situation three games into the regular season, Jason? Would you assess it?
Well, based on what Penny said last night, I don't get the feeling that he's ready to pull the plug on either one of them. But he's getting closer, I think. He's getting closer to at least trying something else. Mm-hmm. Whether that's like, you know, not starting either one of them and letting them both come off the bench, you know, at different points in games, or you know, I just get the feeling that he's. I think we're going to look up Friday against Western Kentucky, and Alex Lomax is still going to be starting. But if he comes out and looks, you know, it looks like it did this past last night, well, then I think things are going to look a little different in Brooklyn next week. And again, I don't know if it's like if Penny is considering major tweaks, for instance, you know, going with Amani Bates at the one for extended periods of time. I don't know what it will look like if there is going to be some sort of, if he is going to address the point guard position in a significant manner. But I don't think that we're quite there yet. Penny, like, you could almost feel it when he was speaking last night. He is like yearning for one of these two guys, or both, probably both, to figure it out, settle down, and give him what he's looking for. Mm-hmm. Give him, and he's not really asking for much. He's asking for like really good defense, which both of them are capable of. You know, being smart with the ball and knocking down a few, you know, whenever they get open looks, knocking them down, getting to the free throw line, distributing, you know, like, you know, the things a point guard does. It's not like he's asking a ton of either one of these guys. It's just, he hasn't been getting it consistently from either one. So, I think he's going to give him another shot, Friday, and then maybe reassess after that.
Yeah. It's interesting because we're talking about Tyler Harris. And I do wonder if maybe he's not an option at the one. I know he, you know, he didn't look. The problem they have is none of them look great. Whether it was bringing the ball up the floor, whether it was A-Lo or, well, here's what I'd say. It's interesting to me. Like, if you go through it, A-Lo is the one guy on the roster who seems like more solid than the rest bringing the ball up the floor. A-Lo's problem is in the half court, he's not solid. Like, he too often makes poor decisions in the half court, and defenses can play 4-on-5 because he doesn't shoot. Okay. But the problem, and so that's A-Lo's issue. The issue with the other guys is like Earl Timberlake struggles to bring the ball up the floor. Amani yeah. Bates right now, you know, I've maintained that I think ultimately for this team to reach its ceiling, and I still feel this way, ultimately, it involves Amani playing the one because that's the way you get your five best players on the floor.
Yeah.
But right now, Amani struggles to bring the ball up the floor. He had 4 turnovers last night. So, like, I think, you know, I would be focusing my energy on, yes, what Penny's doing with Earl and A-Lo, trying to raise their confidence levels and get them to a point where they're competent. But I'd also be thinking about, how do I get to a point in February or March where Amani Bates isn't going to have trouble bringing the ball up the floor? Because ultimately what we've seen in these three games is, as great as Tyler's been, as great as Landers has been, even in with that poor shooting performance, the maturation of his game, he has taken his game, overall game, to another level this season, I think.
He had the best plus minus of the bunch last night, and it wasn't even close.
He's doing a lot more than shooting now. But their best offense is, get the ball in Amani Bates' hands and let him go to work. That's how I put it on Twitter. Whether it's shooting the ball, whether it's creating for others in the half court. And again, he's not there bringing the ball up the court. But I'm in a place, my feeling has been, why can't you get him there eventually? Because that's where your greatest ceiling is. You know, it's not because you don't have another good option. Like, I just don't think there's a discernible difference, ultimately. Like, A-Lo and Earl don't feel like they're good enough to not try it at some point because it's the easiest way to get your five on the floor, best five on the floor. But we shall see. I don't think Amani's there right now. And maybe you lose something if you play him at point guard, perhaps. I don't know. But I just don't think the other options are so good that you don't try and work towards that still. But I think it's very clear Penny thinks the solution, and I don't think he's necessarily wrong, is getting Alo and or Earl to a competent level at point guard. If he can do that, maybe that is a better option than Amani, you know, because maybe you lose something with Amani playing the one and he's not, you know, he can't bring the ball up the floor yet. Maybe that ends up, but like right now, you know, again, I thought Alo was better than Earl yesterday. And I thought he was better after a shaky start, but he's still in that. It's in the half court where Alo really struggles. He too often makes bad decisions, whether it's turnovers or driving wild drives to the basket or passing up shots. Like those are bad decisions sometimes that clog the offense.
And sometimes they all come on the same play. There was a play last night where he had an open look. He had an open look at a three, decided to drive it into a much bigger defender. And like it was almost like he jumped without any intention of actually shooting the ball and didn't know what to do with it. So he threw it to the floor, hoping to knock it out of bounds. Like it was just a very cluttered thing. And that was early. You're right. He settled down and picked things up later. He actually finished with the second best plus minus on the team last night for the game, 15, but plus 15. But yeah, they're just, it's like he can be.
No, there's no perfect answer right now. There just isn't. Like even like I think you might want to consider giving Tyler Harris a look because Tyler Harris's biggest deficiency is that he can't defend. Well, now that they have Jalen Duren and they block like 10 double-digit shots every game, well, that helps negate some of those weaknesses Tyler has. I still think he's probably best suited to be like what he was last night. Like, man, things are not going great. Let's bring Tyler off the bench as a spark because he can hit some shots. If he's not hitting shots, we can pull him. You know, like, that's probably what he settles into with this team. But, you know.
Look, if that's the route they decide to go, if they decide to put a 6'9"2 and a 5'9"2 on the floor at the same time to trade off bringing the ball up the floor.
The goal is ultimately to just get the ball in Amani's hands. Like honestly, like they did it in the second half against St. Louis. There was a lineup they had, and I thought it was a pretty good lineup. It was Tyler, Amani, Landers, Josh Minot, and Duren. Like, it was actually a pretty good lineup. And it was hilarious seeing them huddle up on the floor because there was little 5'9 Tyler Harris, and then, like, everyone else was taller than 6'7. But the joy of watching Tyler is, man, he belongs out there with those guys. Like, he's good, you know? Yeah. And so, the point guard dilemma is interesting, just like, frankly, Jason, the rotation. Once again, it feels like it's going to be a constant topic of discussion with this team, given how many options they have. And frankly, given Penny's, you want to talk about his weakness as a coach. One of his weaknesses as a coach is that he's struggled every year to set a rotation. You know, I'm not ready to say he's there yet this year, but he certainly is not. It certainly doesn't seem like he is following through with his promise from the preseason so far that he was going to go with a 9 or 10 man rotation. I believe 12 minutes into this game last night against St. Louis, 12 players had played. What do you make of the rotation, Jason? The choices he's making right now, and what he, you know, what would you do? What would your rotation look like moving forward after what you've seen in these first three games?
So I'm just starting to wonder: is Penny Hardaway by now? Is this just who he is? Like, Mm-hmm. He can say all he wants to, that he wants to get it down to 9 or 10 guys, maybe even 8. And maybe there will be some times. I mean, like there were times last year where he got short against Houston. That immediately comes to mind. I mean, he's not completely incapable of doing that. But it's interesting. 12 minutes into the game, he said that he had played 12 guys. If you look at the box score, 10 guys played, only 10 guys played 14 minutes or more. There were 4 guys who played 5 minutes or less. So you take those guys, you take those 4 guys out, you know, Chandler Lawson, Malcolm Dandridge, Connor Glennon, and Tadarius Jacobs. You take those guys out, well, there's a 10-man rotation right there. I mean, there were 10 guys in the game last night who, you know, played meaningful minutes. There were 4 that didn't. So yeah, he played 14 guys in the game, but only 10 played meaningful minutes. So, you know, is it?
Here's the problem, Jason. He said after the game, I need to get Malcolm more minutes.
He did.
I don't know. It's my problem with it is that, one, I think part of the turnover problems they have are because Penny plays so many damn different lineups. And the guy, you know, there's not a lot of continuity out there on the floor because he substitutes too much. Okay. Yes. It's been a problem. I think it's a symptom of their turnover problems every year. Like it's again, I think it's one of his weaknesses as a coach is that his trigger on substitutions and rotations is not good. It's just not.
That is correct.
I also think this, and this is one of my problems with what's going on right now, is I think it's already pretty clear to me how you narrow down the rotation and who should be playing through 3 games. Like, whatever you – like, let's say you're staying with the current starting lineup. So those 5, Lomax, Bates, Lester, DeAndre, and Duren. Clearly those 5 are in it, plus Landers. I think right now, if someone gets in foul trouble early, one of the big men, whether it's Duren or DeAndre, I think you're going to Minot no matter what. I think he's that good. Whether it's 4 or you, if Duren gets in early foul trouble, you move DeAndre to the 5 and play Minot at the 4. If DeAndre gets in foul trouble, you play Minot at the 4 and Duren at the 5. Like, so to me, there's a clear, okay, Jalen and Amani are playing. I want them playing like 30 minutes a game, you know? And Lester and DeAndre and Landers, well, I want those guys in like 25 minutes a game. Maybe even more. And then maybe one of them is playing 30 if they're whoever's playing the best is playing more. Yeah. And then I want Minot in there like, you know, 20 something minutes a game too. And then if Earl's your backup point guard, like, you know, him and Alo are splitting minutes, you know, probably maybe playing 15 minutes a piece, something like that. That's 8. And then if you're in bad foul trouble, whether it's Chandler Lawson or Malcolm Dandridge, I frankly would pick Chandler Lawson. I know he hasn't played much this year, but I trust him more than Malcolm Dandridge. Malcolm Dandridge is so up and down, it feels like. And then if you need a spark, you put Tyler in. Boom. That's your 10. And the problem is,
let's talk about who you left off.
Yeah, I left off Jaden Hardaway, who played 18 minutes last night. And, you know, again, it just like, it happened last year, you know, when he's playing against Tennessee Tech and North Carolina Central, he looks good because he's not a bad player. He just shouldn't be playing as much as he does for Memphis. And last night you saw against a better team, you know, I just don't know what, like, there's no, like, what does he actually bring to the rotation other than, I guess Penny trusts him. Like, I think that's why, that's the value they see in him. Like, he doesn't, he's not going to make the wrong play. Right. But, like, I don't know. It's very easy to discern who should be in the rotation and how this should go. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to, like, harp on it too much because, as you put it, I think this is just who Penny is. Like, yeah. he's a little too nice in some regards. Like, I know he talked the talk in the preseason of, you know, people are going to have hurt feelings, but I don't care. You know, this is about winning. But, like, you know, until he does it, until I see it, you know, I'm just going to have you. Like, there are a lot of positives about Penny Hardaway that other coaches don't have. And this might just be, you know, like, no coach is perfect. And I think this might be just part of, you know, this is what you know, to get the great parts of Penny Hardaway, you got to deal with Penny Hardaway at times, where he, you know, he's not good at setting a rotation. And so it is what it is. I'll be interested to see if he follows through on what ultimately, as we get into tougher games. Like, I think that'll be another interesting sign of this. Like, when they play Virginia Tech, yeah. does that change how he approaches this? You know, and so it's only three games. Just like, you know, I would say the flaws that you've seen in terms of the turnovers and the point guard situation and rebounding and free throw shooting, like, those feel like March problems to me. I would say the same thing about this. Like, hopefully, these early games, you know, ultimately set a tone for the rest of the year in terms of, okay, we tried it this way. Let's try it a different way. You know, it's so early. You know, it's so early in the season. So I'm not ready to just say this is how it's going to be the rest of the year. I am leaving the door wide open for Penny Hardaway finding his bearing in terms of setting a rotation.
So as we are getting ready to go back to Brooklyn 2 years ago, as we know, Memphis went up there to play NC State in the same event at the Barclays Center. And it was like one of their best wins that year. Mm-hmm. In NC State. How many guys do you think he played in that game?
That's interesting. He didn't play James Wiseman. I know that he was on the team still, but not playing. Nine?
Close. He played 10, and two of them played 7 minutes. Malcolm Dandridge and Jaden Hardaway played 7 minutes apiece. So he played eight guys, 11 minutes or more. And you could take it out even further. He played seven guys, 15 minutes or more. So, like, you know, maybe that's...
And last year, at the NIT run, he played a shortened rotation. His best moments of coach have come with a 9 or 10 man rotation. That's just the reality. And the quicker he realizes that, the better it'll be for this team. Even if, you know, there's some guys, as he put it, who are unhappy. But, you know, if he feels like he's got to play both Chandler and Malcolm, if he feels like he's got to play Jaden, like, you know, you're going to have a bloated rotation. That's just the reality. So that will be interesting to watch as we move forward. Friday night, Jason, Tigers take on Western Kentucky, a team they lost to last year up in South Dakota. But no Charles Bassey this time for Western Kentucky. He's gone, and he really killed in Memphis last season in that loss. Western Kentucky, by the way, off to a 1-2 start this year. They're number 111 in KenPom. However, the two losses are neutral site losses to Minnesota and South Carolina. 4-point loss to Minnesota, 11-point loss to South Carolina. So not horrible losses by any means. But they are 1-2, and at least according to KenPom, slightly lesser than St. Louis. But feels like another game, Jason, where they'll be tested, but ultimately they should, based on talent, overwhelm Western Kentucky, particularly at home. What do you make of the matchup?
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier what Penny said about playing Malcolm more minutes, wanting to get Malcolm more minutes. I don't think it's any coincidence that Western Kentucky is going to be the biggest team that Memphis has faced so far. They are...
They have a 7'5 guy, I think.
He is the tallest player in Division I this year. Jamarian Sharp is the tallest player in Division I. He's actually also a player that Memphis had their eye on. They were kicking the tires on him as he was coming out of junior college this past offseason.
Stansberry can always get talent. He does it, I don't know, but I'm not going to get into it, but he always has talent. It's Rick Stansberry.
Well, you say talent. This Jamarian Sharp, the 7'5" monster, isn't even number one on his own team in rebounding through three games. He's also got only five blocks through three games. So I don't know.
He's a backup. I believe he's not starting. They start Jalen Butts at center.
Yeah, well, maybe so. But I mean, like, you actually look at their stats. They've only played eight or nine guys all year in three games. So you talk about a shortened rotation. Maybe it rubs off on Penny on Friday. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, they're gonna be okay. They're gonna be fine. But I think Memphis wins this one in similar fashion to the way the first three games have gone.
Yeah, well, I think it'll be a matchup, as you mentioned, because they're taller and bigger. Like, these first three games, Memphis has had to – one, I think it's part of the reason Duren and DeAndre have gotten in foul trouble. They've been having to guard much smaller guys. This is going to be more traditional matchups for Memphis in terms of height. And so I actually think – I like this matchup even more for Memphis. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a commanding performance, if that makes sense. I think this is a better matchup for the Tigers than St. Louis was. And we saw against St. Louis, again, they didn't even have to play great to win going away. So that's what makes you excited for what's to come in this season. You know, they're not even playing. You watch them and you go, man, there's so much more this team can do. And then you look up and they've scored 90 points and they're up by 20. They're up by 20 something in the second half against a St. Louis team that I thought wasn't bad. Like pretty decent, seemed like a pretty decent team. Plenty to be excited about if you're a Tiger basketball fan after these first three games. All right. We will have tons of coverage of the Western Kentucky game over at commercialappeal.com. On Friday. Next week, Tigers head to Brooklyn for the Thanksgiving break game against Virginia Tech and then either Xavier or Iowa State. Jason will be heading to Brooklyn, eating turkey in Brooklyn for us. We may or may not, we'll see. Depends how much time we have next week before Jason leaves, but we'll probably do another podcast next week getting you set for those two games in Brooklyn. But again, head over to commercialappeal.com where we've always got coverage of this Memphis basketball team. Also, make sure me and Jason this year are doing a Tiger basketball newsletter. You can sign up for that over at commercialappeal.com. You can get exclusive columns/stories that don't appear in print from Jason and I, as well as links and all that. It's a great way to digest all the content Jason and I are producing, most importantly, Jason, for this season. Also, make sure you go follow our Instagram account, at mem.sports, another good way to consume all you could ever want from the Commercial Appeal. Till next time, I was Mark. I was joined by Jason. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your week.
The Tiger Basketball Podcast is a production of The Commercial Appeal.